This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Good afternoon, my friends. Welcome to the We Are Libertarians podcast. Greg, why am I doing that?
Because you are the possessor of the golden EIB microphone.
Nay?
WAL microphone.
There you go. I bought myself a Christmas present, everybody, and it is a golden microphone.
And test run one has failed miserably.
Dottle up, dottle up, dottle up. Yeah, I know. I spent $20 on this stupid thing as a gag, and it doesn't even fit the microphone. So, way to ruin theater of the mind, Creighton Harrington.
Debbie Downer.
Yeah, we all know Greg's voice. But to my left, the triumphant return of one Creighton Harrington, everybody. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, everybody.
Welcome back. We're so glad to see you. It's been so long. You probably don't even recognize the equipment. You've been gone so long.
I mean, it's still a bunch of switches and
knobs and things novels. That you don't know how to work. Yeah. This is episode 71. Can you believe it?
71 weeks ago. Well, actually, what, 70? Oh, it's probably 85 weeks ago by now.
Yeah, it was like it was March 8th, 2012 when this Creighton Harrison showed up to the Rupert for Governor headquarters, and I said, "Hey, buddy, let's do a podcast." And he's like, "Hey, my name is Creighton Harrington, and you are having me on a podcast, and you don't even know my name." So, and then Chris Galt was also there, and obviously, since then, the show has transformed.
Who is Chris Galt?
That's exactly right. So, he's doing well. I follow him on the Facebook and the Google Plus.
The
Google Plus and the Snapchat, and he seems to be doing very well. So Christmas.
You do Snapchat?
Yes, I do.
God. We are adults. Snapchat is for children. Let's just get this out in the open. I'm sorry, listeners, if you're over the age of 12 and you have a Snapchat, please delete it. I'm sorry.
Admit you'd have been happy as hell girls had Snapchat when we were in high school.
Yeah,
boom, roasted, yeah.
And we were a little older than 12.
The fact remains that, you know, I mean, everyone here is over 20.
Hold that mic steady. You've forgotten your mic technique, as if he ever had one.
Well, where's all the stands at? We used to have
stands. We'll get you a stand if you'd like. All right, let's talk to Creighton Harrington, because all of a sudden, he comes back from Washington, D.C., and he's telling everybody how to live their life. Like a cranky old white man. So apparently, Potomac Fever.
I need to check my CIS. Is that? Or is it CIS or CIS? I don't even know how to pronounce
it. CIS.
Check your white privilege.
I need to check my CIS white privilege.
Yes.
That's right. You're telling me that I can't Snapchat. I can Snapchat with Matt Hurt if I want.
You can.
Do so.
You can.
Let me tell you the level of disappointment with Snapchat. You think you're going to see something naughty, and then it's from Matt Hurt.
Very true.
From the Obsessive Viewer podcast. Not that I don't love you, buddy, but, you know.
He just doesn't want to see you.
Step up your game and let me see some side moves.
The thing is I'm lost on this joke for more than one reason. One, I don't know who you're talking about. And two, I know a guy out in D.C. whose name is also Matt Hurt.
Matt Hurt? Yeah. There are two Matt Hurts.
Oh, boy.
Does this guy podcast?
I don't think so.
No.
Does he know everything there ever was to know about X-Files?
He was in the Blaze, I'm sure. Spangle saw it was in the Blaze of Justin Amash went to a bar in Arlington and it was a
impromptu thing.
Matt Hurt organized that, the one I'm talking about.
I think I know this Matt Hurt.
Huh.
So anyways, let's get back to Creighton Harrington. Creighton, what have you been doing in Washington, D.C.? Why have you been absent from the podcast?
I've actually not been in D.C., let's be clear. I've been in Virginia.
Oh, right. The distinction without a difference.
No. There is a big difference.
It's a Mason-Dixon thing, bro.
It's Virginia. I live in Virginia, and I work in Virginia.
I thought you were in Silver Springs, or maybe Bethesda.
No, I'm not.
I'm saying that as a joke. Trolling.
No. No, I've just been working with Yao. I'm the Midwest regional director. So I've been regional directing.
Been directing people. Have you been bossing them around, telling them what to do? Centrally planning y'all from Washington, D.C.?
God, no. We have volunteers. You can't boss a volunteer around.
Nobody knows that better than me. Trust me. Yeah, I'm out of that game. I have retired from the bossing volunteers around days.
I've just been, you know, during the internship, we were working on the national convention, which was really successful, and then this past semester, we worked on getting our network up to 500 chapters, which was a growth of 25% in less than a semester. Our target was to get it done before, you know, Christmas break, and we got it done back in September. So we went from 400 to 500 chapters really fast. So now we're all switching gears and focusing on the spring semester of state conventions that are going to be going around the country, two of which will be in my region, and we'll be doing trainings and having speakers and stuff like that, and we'll be having some more activism events, so hopefully more chapters can grow and get in the news and will spread the ideas.
You might tell people, just in case they don't know, what exactly is Young Americans for Liberty?
Hopefully, if you listen to the podcast, you know what it is by now.
Many new listeners since you left. Once you left, this thing really took off.
So we're up to dozens of listeners.
Dozens
now.
And dozens of listeners every episode.
Exponential growth.
Yes.
Young Americans for Liberty is a nonprofit, student campus-based organization that basically what we do is we have chapters located on various college campuses, and we provide resources, training, networking, and things like that to our chapters to promote the ideals of liberty on campus to the student body.
And by extension, they also fund this podcast.
They do not.
And they endorse every position.
Every single position.
Young Americans for Liberty is not affiliated with this podcast in any way, shape, form.
Well, they sent you that thank you note after talking about 9/11 truth, right?
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Fluoride in the water. Big fans. Big fans of ours.
Now, is Suzanne Schaefer, that's occasionally been on here, is she the Indiana chair?
She
is. Jillian.
Jillian.
Jillian. Was. She's right. Stepping down to do, you know, real life work stuff. But Suzanne is the new chapter president at IU Bloomington's.
Very nice, Suzanne.
Hey, Donnie Baker adding an S to it.
And she...
Bloomington's!
Let's be real, there are
IU
two
Bloomington's. Chapter. I was the possessive S. She's also a campus coordinator with Students for Liberty. So.
Okay. So she double dips.
She's double fisting on Liberty.
There's a lot of crossover. If anyone's been in the Liberty movement for more than 10 minutes knows that everybody knows everybody.
Right. I'm a nobody. No, Judd Weiss has never taken my picture. Yeah. I'm really a nobody in the Libertarian movement.
Well, if you go to ISFLC ever again, you'll probably get it taken.
Doubtful.
Now, also, you brought a guy from University of Indianapolis on here, a potential recruit. How did that work out? Did we scare him off?
No, he... I'm still working on him.
I forgot about that guy. That was forever ago. Yeah, you're like, I'm going to impress him with Liberty in my big podcast.
Well, he was really into it because his school stuff is he's going for radio anyway. I'm still working on that one. That's still Target Campus.
Still Target Campus.
He's like, he worked for the radio station there, and then he comes here and he's like, this is what my future looks like. Oh,
may he rest in peace.
My wife, I think, is tipsy because she's running through the house going, here, kitty, 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 kitty. You're so pretty. Oh, your fur's so soft. Yeah, she's drunk. So pretty soon she'll be coming, putting her head on my shoulder and saying, shh, I love you. That's her drunk move.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So
she doesn't want anyone to know, so no. She shushes you first.
She goes, shh, I love you. I wouldn't want anybody to know that either. Like, all of a sudden. By the way, Greg Linz got me a very nice Christmas present. He made good on forgetting last week.
Hey, I had bought it a long time ago.
I gave everyone great presents last week, and then nobody got me anything, so Greg did a nice makeup present.
Yeah, way to be the guy who gets gold and while we get frankincense and myrrh.
Right.
Hey.
No, it's actually, it is a beautifully bound, Would you, you got this from the Smithsonian, I assume?
No, not from the Smithsonian, from a vintage bookseller.
Very cool.
Would the vintage bookseller happen to be right around the corner?
It's actually up in Zionsville.
It is the Morals of Jesus, the Jefferson Bible. It's leather-bound. Now all I need is some more mahogany.
It's very Republican-looking, if you will.
So nice.
It is very Republican-looking.
It is, with a very sweet note in the inside.
Like, that's that's the one where you turn it towards the camera when you're doing, like, an interview or something. You put it on your bookshelf and you turn that one towards the camera.
He got, what'd he get you for Christmas?
He got me, three koozies, one of which has, Robert E. Lee, the general, on it, and it says Southern Gentleman. The other one has, Come and Take It, and the cannon.
From Texas.
The Gonzales flag,
yeah. And then the third one has, a very dapper-looking gentleman. In a silhouette.
That's actually the brand one. It's a brand called Rowdy Gentlemen, and I like their apparel and their hats and golf clothing very much.
So Greg also brought PBR for Creighton tonight, as well as some pizza. So we're celebrating.
He hasn't forgotten.
Yep, we're celebrating Creighton's return.
We are. The prodigal son.
Well, let's talk about Young Americans for Liberty. Are there misconceptions that people have about the organization? Like, are you guys Koch-funded? That's normally one that is... That pops up, and I don't believe you accept any Coke money at all, do you?
I'm not Devo, so I don't know exactly all the details on funding, but from what I understand, pretty much all of our money income is from individual donors.
Okay.
We're working on trying to get C3 status.
Okay. Which means you'd be educational and not a political action.
Which we are right now, but we're C4.
Right.
But they're C3. I don't know. It's paperwork, red tape, IRS stuff, and I'm not really involved in that. I'm field program.
So you've been targeted by the former IRS director?
I have no idea. I think there's a stipulation that to get money from foundations like...
Yeah,
you have to have a certain tax status, and I'm not sure. But from what I understand, all of our fundraising is from individual donors. So,
that's
the limit to my knowledge on our fundraising.
Are you a Republican organization?
Absolutely not.
Right.
We're nonpartisan whatsoever. I mean, we're not Republican. We're not Democrat. We're not Libertarian Party. We're a nonpartisan organization.
But to be fair. You generally help Republican candidates like Justin Amash and Thomas
Massey.
The
YAL PAC is a separate entity than what I work for. I work for Young
Oh, that's right. That's who sends us a check, Greg.
Yeah, YAL PAC.
Sorry. I didn't mean that. We're just kidding. We're just kidding.
Yes. YAL PAC has in bundled money for candidates. But like I said, that's a totally separate entity than Young Americans for Liberty, the company I work for.
Right. So what are some other misconceptions that are typically out there about Young Americans for Liberty that ought to be cleared up?
Like from misconceptions from whom?
I don't know. Do you guys get hate mail or do you guys, seem to be a fairly...
I mean, we are a small L libertarian group, so yeah, we get a lot of hate mail.
Yeah, you guys seem to be one of those groups that kind of stays above all the BS, like an Americans for Prosperity gets hit and targeted all the time. But SFL and YAL, it's sort of like the Advocates where everybody just generally likes those organizations and they don't get a lot of flack for very much stuff, but... I figured I'd give you the opportunity so that way if people... Because I hear the Coke thing all the time used as a smear, even by libertarians, and I know that it's not true.
Me personally, while I can't say that we get Coke money because I honestly don't know, I personally don't really care.
I mean...
By the way, if anybody wants... anybody from the Coke organization is listening, if they'd like to give us money...
We can be bought.
We're totally willing to be bought.
Whatever, you know.
I saw the wine piece on Sunday morning CBS. You have a beautiful wine collection, Mr. Coke. I hate all those fraudsters. Let me know if I can help in any way.
Democrats stink and they're
right.
Boring.
Yeah, boo Democrats.
Boo.
So, P.O. Box 441831, Indianapolis, Indiana 46244. What are some of the cool things that you get to do working for YAL? I know we've talked about Ron Paul's Pizza Hut car and some of those things in the past.
God.
See those on a previous episode.
You remember that.
Of course. How could I forget that Ron Paul likes Pizza Hut? I mean...
It's pretty surreal. I mean, maybe not necessarily just limited to YAL, but like you know, going out to, like I mentioned, the fundraiser for Justin Amash. I mean, that bar was like, you know, a block away from my office. So getting to go to those kind of things, and it's, like I said, it is kind of a small world. So, you know, we go out to all these events. We have karaoke night. I think the Arlington County Young Republicans have a karaoke night at that same bar every Tuesday night. And go out there, and you just see all these people that, and sometimes I just have to take a step back and be like, you know, these people that I'm seeing in this room, you know, right now they're friends, and, you know, but in 30 years, who knows, these people are going to be, you know, captains of industry, they're going to be politicians, they're going to be important people,
and be Karl Rove.
And I'm going to be looking back and be like, man, I knew that guy.
That guy was an idiot, man.
Yeah. How did that guy get there?
That guy was a mean drunk.
Oh, found out he was a Bush.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Hey, why is that guy a Family Values warrior? He's gayer than a Milky Way bar.
But stuff like that. Like, there were the Christmas party for the Arlington County Young Republicans. I went to that, and Matt Kibbe spoke, which, I mean, we saw Matt Kibbe speak at the state convention, but it was much more low-key. It was only, like, probably, like, 40, 50 people in the room.
I'm sorry. When Matt Kibbe gets low-key, does he just start napping on stage?
No, it was... It was pretty cool, but it's things like that, getting to go, and then not even just that, things that are hosted by other organizations, you know, the Generation Opportunity has their mixers and stuff, and I think that's really cool, because these are people who, you know, like I said, in the future, they're probably going to be super important, and then there are super important people to go there, and it's not like, coming from a position where I always had to be like, you know, I had to save up and buy the plane ticket months in advance and fly out here for a weekend and get to go to like a convention or something. And that was the limited involvement with that kind of world. And now I get, it's kind of like every weekend, you know, there's the possibility that I get to do that. And I think that's the thing that I think is really, really cool.
I've worked on and off and in and around politics for 12 years. I worked as the executive director of the Libertarian Party for 4 years, which... very similar to what you're doing, but on a state scale. As a person who works in politics, have you started and have you when has the cynicism started to grow? Do you now hate people? Has that started to take place yet? Or do we still have a little way to go?
I love people. I love people.
Yeah, but don't tell me you don't hang up that phone and call people stupid. Come on now.
No. No, I would never do that.
All right. I'm just testing you. Just wanted to see where you're at.
No.
Politics is going to be his future.
Yeah. If trust me, by now, if you're not hanging up the phone going, God, I got to find a way out of this job, then
no,
you're
I,
loving
I,
it. Then
I
you're,
really do enjoy it. Yeah. I think it's fun. But the I'd say if anything has happened, I've become more entrenched in my hatred for... hatred's a strong word. My disagreement with the other side.
I thought you were non-political. Non-partisan.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean the other side?
The other side.
The other ideological side.
Communists? Socialists.
If that's an ideology, then yes.
Welfare liberals.
As long as it's an ideology.
Democrats?
Hey, I personally can believe whatever the heck I want.
That's right. Very true.
I think I ask for Greg when I say chicks. Liberty chicks?
Yourself, huh?
You got a girlfriend?
You asked for me.
Listen, you wanted me to ask this question. Don't even lie.
Uh-huh.
You got a girlfriend?
I do not.
Whatever happened to Cartwheel Girl?
I mean, you win some, you lose some.
There's plenty more out there.
All right.
There's one thing that I believe is that, you know, I'm only 23 years old.
That's true.
I've got plenty of friggin' time.
And you were in a long relationship.
Yeah.
So now is the good years.
In a really weird turn of events, my brother hangs out with his ex-girlfriend all the time.
Yeah.
They're not dating, but they're...
She was telling me about that, because that's who I'm meeting up with for drinks afterwards.
Oh.
The ex?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't a bad breakup or anything.
Hey, different area.
Did you see the Millers this past week?
No, I didn't.
Is she Christmas horny?
But, she was telling me about that. I said, I have to go to a podcast first, and she's like, is that with Chris Spangle? I hang out with his brother all the time. He's hilarious.
Yeah, like BFFs, like constantly on each other's Facebook wall. It's
is
really,
he friend-zoned?
I think so. My brother has the same record with women that I do.
He's married.
No. Yeah, so he's a failure, like me.
This will be news to Creighton's sister.
Yeah. All right, well... anybody that we should be watching, that the Washington Liberati is really a buzz about? Who, other than like Amash and Thomas Massey, like who are the other sneaky politicians around the country or in D.C. that...
You mean the good ones or the bad ones?
The good ones.
I mean, I would say, you know, Thomas Massey is a good one that everyone knows about, but he's also going to be primaried, I think. Mm. So that's something to keep an eye on. Amash is obviously being primaried, and I think not so much, we're not seeing a lot of pushback from the left. I mean, we are, but not as much as you would think, because a lot of the pushback is coming from the establishment wing of the Republican Party, and this has been bound to happen. I mean, it was only a matter of time before it happened, and we've seen that on the national stage, like with the budget deal and all that kind of stuff. But we're also seeing it at, you know, in districts and in states where we're seeing, you know, people getting primaried now by establishment people. So Thomas Massey might have a primary. Amash is definitely going to have one.
Wow. What kind of libertarian are you? You said Amish? Come on now.
If there's anything that can be relied upon, it is the GOP's lack of commitment to diversity.
Right. It's not even just that. It's like you just got to look at it and be like, dude, why don't you get it? Why you no get it?
No, seriously, it's the Republican establishment, the Republican Party at large, truly, they like diversity. Your skin color and your gender and all those other factors can be different, but as long as you're ideologically, it's exactly like everybody else's, that's what they care about.
What ideology?
Well, the ideology espoused by Mr. Rush Limbaugh.
I don't know. I see these people, like Amash and Massey, have done more to bring the very people into the Republican Party that people, that establishment people have wanted. I mean, young people.
Rand Paul.
Huge. I mean, these people, they bring in these young people, and you're going to primary them? And did you see the impromptu radio debate between Amash and his primary challenger?
No, he probably destroyed the hell out of him.
So the primary challenger was getting an interview on Michigan radio, some radio station in Michigan, and just Amash just calls in.
Troll.
Just calls in and starts a and just debates him. And it's like the reasons why he's running is like, oh, you didn't support this budget deal and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you're not a fiscal conservative. And he's like, I didn't support it because it isn't fiscally conservative. And it's just things like that. And it's like, this guy is obviously just like a placeholder for all the money.
He's Dan Coats.
Yeah, he's just a placeholder. And I wonder, you know, what is it going to take for these people? Because you got to think that these establishment guys who have all this money, they could still be the establishment guys with a lot of money and just support the good candidates instead of the bad ones. It's like, what's going to have to be done to get it through their heads that these ideas that you're pushing are why you're losing?
You can't fundraise off liking gays and not killing babies. Can't do it.
I mean, I
you just had to bring up abortion, didn't you?
No, I meant babies in general, not any particular stage.
But, yeah, I don't know. But I look at it and I'm always aghast at how intransigent and stubborn these and just stupid they are. It's like you don't have a choice. Establishment Republicans, listen up. You don't have a choice. If you don't change the way you walk, you're not going to be a national party anymore.
You'll be the Dixiecrats.
Yeah, you're going to lose. It isn't a matter of, oh, we just need to convince the people that we're right. Everyone's convinced you're wrong and you're not going to change their mind. I mean, you might as well be trying to argue with a hard leftist that you're right. I mean, it's not going to happen. So just stop.
I still contend that, like, they may pick up seats. I think they're going to pick up a lot of seats in the 2014 elections, you know.
Who?
The Republicans. I think they're going to. But their framework and their ideology is not fit to govern. They can't pass legislation because... Like, Rand Paul is fantastic. He goes and speaks, and I forget who he was co-authoring the bill with, about the end of the minimum prison sentences, and then another lady that was a very civil libertarian position. And so having that avenue available, you can broker deals. You tit for tat. All but I can you deliver look at this the, caucus, you come on the tax
Yeah,
cut.
You, if you look at the drug reform yeah, another issue... One. It was the airing of grievances tweets that Rand Paul was making jokes, out of airing of grievances with the government. And Cory Booker, he'd made a joke about how Cory Booker never retweets him enough.
Yep.
And then Cory Booker said, well, let's change that, and also let's start reforming the drug laws.
And that is the framework for governance. And that's why Republicans are considered the party of no. They get in, well, we're going to tax cut, and we're going to make sure that no gays get married, and we'll figure it out from there. And it's like, oh my gosh,
you know, the other problem is that these old-timers, people like Lamar Alexander or Corbin.
The child pornographer Lamar Alexander?
He'd stop it. No, that's not fair. Because
he was an investor, silent investor.
It was his staffer, wasn't it? It wasn't actually him.
His chief staffer.
So the John Cornyn, who has handled the money for the Senate Republicans forever.
Man, I'll tell you what. I saw that guy. Just a quick tangent. I saw that guy at a fundraiser. That dude's forehead is huge. I'm not kidding, man. It's a six head.
Well, they're screening that new Netflix Mitt documentary on it.
I would be surprised.
So you've got these guys who have been there forever, and the Senate and Washington and politics in general is just full of egos. And so you've got these guys who have been there forever, who have stepped on everybody's toes, and everybody talks about, oh, well, how you've got, oh, we got to go along to get along, we all work together behind the scenes, and blah, blah, blah. It's like bull crap. You don't get anything done because you pissed on some guy's shoe 20 years ago.
And he's been doing nothing but waiting to get back at you.
Wait, wasn't that Lyndon Johnson?
Yes, it was, actually. Are you wearing his shoes today, by the way? Look at these shoes. Are these not screaming Republican shoes?
You know, they're actually not screaming Republican shoes.
They're just nice shoes, man.
Those are
Quit
stylish.
Quit hating on my nice shoes.
You're wearing Carhartts and nice shoes and black.
Carhartts?
Those are Carhartts.
These are Carhartts.
This is a chino.
Oh, a chino. Oh.
No, he's very Georgetown, Georgetown young John
Kennedy. It's cold outside, so I put pants and a long sleeve shirt on.
I'm going to see my ex-girlfriend outfit. That's what that is.
Nah, dude, I found that having to work in a business casual setting, my t-shirts and jeans are, well, I can wear the jeans. My t-shirts have been in short supply lately.
I'm with you. All I've got is pocketed shirts everywhere. So let's get to it. So we kind of touched on a few topics, but you brought up an article about the Japanese, and you've got a few predictions. They're economic-based, so it is perfect because we have our own in-house economist here with us today.
We do.
Mr. Creighton Harrington.
Our favorite Austrian, if you
will. That's right. So why don't you share with us an update on what is taking place in Japan, and what does it mean for us once Janet Yellen is in place?
So last year, the Japanese elected a guy named Shinzo Abe. And he ran on a platform of economic growth. He ran on the idea, it's called Abenomics. It's going to be a combination of fiscal spending, very aggressive, also very loose monetary policy. And he actually wanted to target a 2% annual inflation rate.
Explain some of those. Hold on. Go ahead.
Isn't that exactly what they've been doing for 30 years?
No, it's funny. Instead of ever committing to it for real, what they ended up doing is what we're in right now. So they would be real aggressive. Then they'd be like, oh my gosh, we got to get this spending and budget under control. The opposite party would say, we got to get serious about the budget and get things under control. And so they would then start tightening it and then start raising taxes to pay for things, and it go right back into recession.
Now, for those playing at home, define some of those terms that you're talking about. Explain the very basics of some of that. So tightening.
Okay,
what?
So money is something that you use to buy things with.
Now listen. You come back and you don't get to insult the listener.
So a central bank, when they want, when the monetary supply, so the number of dollars in an economy increases, they lower rates. Banks borrow, banks lend out because it's cheap to borrow for the bank, and they can make a better return by lending it to consumers. So when they want to tighten, they'll raise interest rates. Money will then come out of the economy and go into a guarantee like a treasury bill. And that brings dollars out of the economy, and it could be argued slows economic growth in the short run, in a very short time frame. And it can cause some pain. And so instead, Abe ran on this idea that we have got to devalue the yen by printing a lot more, and that'll boost exports. The idea being it'll boost manufacturing-type jobs, that type of thing.
It becomes cheap to buy their goods.
Exactly.
Because their money's
expensive anymore.
Yeah.
The problem is, it's been a year, and the way inflation works, and Creighton will know this even better than I do, is the bank borrows, the bank lends it to the company, then in fact uses it to supply goods, and it hits the consumer last. And so while the bank doesn't necessarily feel, they get the first shock of the increase in pricing, the consumer hasn't gotten the increase in wages before they get hit by the increase in price from the increase in dollars. And so what is happening in Japan are all these seniors and the elderly are facing huge price increases just in their basic goods.
And their savings will be obliterated because there's no reason to save.
Because 2% may not sound a lot, but you compound that over 10 years, that is huge. Huge. And if it's over 20 years, it'll probably hyperinflation only usually happens when there's a government sovereignty issue, but it can be very damaging. And what they'll have to do is tie their entitlements to the annual inflation rate. And so then you're just increasing the spending like if we did here in with Social Security. It's a really dangerous game to play because now people are getting concerned and there's starting to be political backlash from seniors and elderly who aren't able to afford food, gas, housing.
Well, welcome to the club. Necessities.
Yeah. Welcome to the millennial nightmare. So what does that mean for America?
So it means we're on that similar path. The trend, and you probably hear this in Washington, is, oh, well, we can always inflate our debt away. We can always just inflate it away. We'll pay them back with cheaper dollars than we borrowed from them. And that is a horrible, horrible idea because a huge segment of our population is on Social Security and completely dependent on it. Most people don't have retirement. If they do, it's way not enough.
The other aspect of it is that people are on fixed incomes from government subsidies, from welfare, from WIC, from other social programs, and so when you have inflation, it's not like they're going to rise that with political inaction means that you're stuck at that level, so your income, you're just going to get poor because you put yourself in a situation where you need the government services.
And this is a theoretical thing, but if we had never had inflation when we instituted the minimum wage, today it'd be worth over $21 an hour. You want to talk about raising the minimum wage? Quit inflating the debt away.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's if amazing. We measured inflation like when we changed it in 1983, we would have 10% annual inflation.
Yeah.
It's absolute crap.
No, but I mean that is monetary policy. That's all it is. People like to dress up monetary policy as if it's this hard, convoluted thing. And it's convoluted the process by which they do it. Like, you know, the discount window and fractional reserve banking and open market purchases and how it goes through the banking system. All that stuff's very technical. But when it comes down to it, the Fed has two things that it can do. Two things and two things only. And that is print money and destroy it. And that's it. So the only policy they don't destroy it because since John Maynard Keynes wrote General Theory, they've been absolutely opposed to destroying money. So it's just been nothing but, you know, inflating the dollar has been monetary policy. That you might as well call monetary policy a synonym with inflation in America because that's all it's been. It's just been different levels, different degrees of how much they're inflating. The common, I guess, is like they say a 2% annual inflation rate is the standard for a healthy economy and all this kind of
crap. That was Friedman's work. And it was a safe bet. He didn't think it was ideal, but he thought we could deal with that.
So that's all central banks can do is print money and destroy it.
I feel like that comment right there, Greg, is when like we're going up the click, 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 click up the nerd roller coaster.
Yeah.
And then you just, that was like the.
Did you notice my hands in the air?
Yeah. Okay. We got really
kind of
like
step by step.
Right.
No, but and so what that means in the United States is this is Janet Yellen is going to be the next Fed chair. January 20th. That's who we're getting. She is very dovish, which means she believes in loose monetary policy.
Oh,
whereas,
really? No way.
Well, Bernanke, it's funny. Bernanke is actually more moderate than her because he obviously believed in it in a depression-type situation. But then,
helicopters.
He announced the end of tapering. And so in the mortgage industry, I noticed it immediately because not only is the Fed essentially raising rates by doing what they're doing, but they are stopping right now. They're purchasing about 50% of all mortgage-backed securities. And so as soon as they announced they were only going to stop $10 billion, they were going to buy $10 billion fewer monthly, we saw a 0.5% jump in interest rates immediately. And everyone overreacted because everyone's nervous. And this really no-name economist on Wall Street right now has been peddling this idea to a bunch of investment banks that we are stuck in what's called the QE trap. It means like the liquidity trap like Keynes, where once you get on QE, you can't get off because then you can't take the pain.
And that's what Schiff, that's what Peter Schiff has been saying since the Fed even started, said the Fed has no exit strategy.
Mm-mm.
You know, the Fed can't just keep QE up forever because eventually you will get hyperinflation. It's just the name of the game.
Yep.
And so they have to get off of it eventually. And when, like you said, once they announced tapering, I mean, stuff, people overreacted. It's like nothing. It's like they're reducing it by $10 billion. Their asset sheet is like
$3 trillion.
Trillions of dollars that we know about.
Yeah, and that's the real issue.
Yeah, that we know of. And it's like, this is barely anything. And something's going to happen where they have to stop going so crazy with printing money. I mean,
I think Yellen's going to continue it because she's more, her actual dissertation was on her and her her husband, who's an economist at Cal. Her dissertation was on when they were decided to hire a babysitter, they decided to pay a higher wage and then market value. And they noticed that the candidates came up and they got a greater supply of labor. People who hadn't been applying for babysitter jobs came out of the woodwork to apply. She thinks that by increasing the monetary supply even more, that's the groundwork of her thinking, we will get lower unemployment. And it goes back to the 70s.
That's the thing. It's like, that is like common economic, mainstream economic theory. You don't want the 70s to happen again.
Exactly. That disproved the entire Keynesian framework. The 1970s. The Phillips curve says if you have high inflation, you will have low unemployment.
Yeah.
If you have low inflation, you'll have high unemployment. Unfortunately, that's where stagflation
was not
comes.
It was not supposed to exist.
And so Paul Krugman does his best every week to try and blame it on something else. And usually it is tied to like an oil shock, or like a scarcity is usually what triggers stagflation. And so that's why I think there are a lot of things going on globally. Like China is going to have to play a bigger role. I was looking at some of their numbers in the Middle East. 86% of their oil goes through Middle Eastern Straits to get to China. If there is a supply, like let's say that All Nurse or Front or somebody grabs control of one of the straits in a very, I guess almost you could say a coup of it, China isn't going to play around. Like if you think America's bad, if you think George W. Bush was bad, go talk to the Communist Party.
Yeah, because what, 60% of our oil comes from Canada?
Exactly.
I mean, we got some wiggle room.
And we're the third largest oil producer in the world.
Listen.
Refined oil.
It is time to become energy efficient because these Canadian bastards, the great white menace of the North, never mind. Don't get me started on Canada.
Was that an endorsement of Sarah Palin, Drill Baby Drill?
Yes. Sarah Palin's had a stellar week. She came out, sidebar, she came out and defended Phil Robertson, and then she came out today and said, well, I never actually read his comments. I just defended him no matter what.
Is that, though, that's pretty par for the course. She didn't read magazines either, according to Katie Couric.
Creighton, what is the operating vein of thought when it comes to Canada and Washington, D.C.? Is there any action to be taken there?
No.
See?
I don't know. I make fun of my roommate's girlfriend because she's from Buffalo. I call her Canadian.
That's
Canada. Decision makers.
Yeah, that's about it.
The decision makers in Washington, D.C., like Creighton, are not even thinking about the Great White.
The decision makers.
So
they're lucky we just don't roll over on them and invade.
That's right.
Well, I guess you could say liberate. Operation Canadian Freedom.
All right. So back to. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No.
So
you're fine. That's what's going to happen here is when the last time Japan tightened rates, when they looked like they started to get some growth and it was self-sustaining, immediate recession. And so if you're watching the markets at all, market didn't react on Wall Street on, you know, like on the major indexes, the stock markets kept going strong. What'll happen though, is if it looks like Yellen even considers, or it gets leaked that she's considering continuing the slowing of tapering of buying long-term treasury bills and buying mortgage-backed securities, you will see another recession. And, well, all that'll happen is the Republicans will just even more crush it and default, which I don't know if that's a good or bad
thing. And the sad thing is that no matter what, it doesn't matter if it's Japan, United States, whatever, I mean, it will eventually have to stop.
Yep.
I mean, it's either now or it's later. I mean, that's the argument Mises made, is that, you know, if you're on a malinvestment stretch, if you're investing incorrectly, if you're booming because of funny money, then sooner or later you're going to have to stop. He used the argument of a guy building a house. If you misjudge how many bricks you have, it's going to hurt less if you stop building your house when you've only put up the front door, not when you've already got the whole roof on and you've realized you can't finish it. It's going to hurt a lot more then. Well, I mean, that's kind of the situation we're in. It's like we're either going to have to stop now and it's going to hurt bad, or we're gonna have to stop in the future when it's gonna hurt even worse. I mean,
we're delaying the inevitable. I mean,
it's, yeah, it's like, really is. It is a delay of the inevitable. There's
in the
nothing
70s,
that can be done.
In the 70s, when Volcker becomes Fed chair. Reagan was coming along, and Art Laffer was organizing his whole economic policy. They had essentially 10-11% annual inflation. It was killer. It was stagflation. Unemployment was high. That's when the misery index came out. And Volcker decided he was going to break the back of inflation by raising interest rates up to 12, 13, 14, 15%. And he said, we're going to go through the short term. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid.
And he got hated so much for it.
Oh, it was brutal. But then Reagan comes in, and the idea was called the fiscal policy mix by Robert Mundell. And what it is when you have inflation, the thought in Washington, the prevailing thought before Reagan was elected, was that, well, we'll just tax away all this excess money. So we'll take it and fund it right back into the government and create more social programs. Well, that wasn't going to fly because it had stopped working. So Art Laffer comes around, he's on the Council of Economic Advisors, and goes, here's what's called the Laffer curve. What it says is that you get the same amount of tax revenue.
It goes from Charlie Chaplin all the way over to Bill Cosby.
Exactly.
So, thank you. I'll be here all week. It's my apartment.
It's a common sense curve. It says if you tax at 0%, you get zero revenue. If you tax 100%, you're going to get zero revenue.
The key is finding the optimum
level. Yeah, so between there, there's an optimum point. And that's something that the Secretary of Treasury under Harding, I think.
Not Morgenthau.
He has a college named after him.
George Mason. George Washington.
No,
Xavier.
It's in like Ohio or
Florida State. Ohio State University.
Bowling Green at University of Miami.
I don't remember.
It's in Ohio. Defiance or
either way.
College.
He's also a guy who said back in under Harding he was the guy who kind of discovered the Laffer curve.
Yeah. And that went away because of Keynes' general theory.
I can't remember his name.
But like we had a depression under Harding that was very short. It was
Mellon.
Carnegie Mellon.
It's not Carnegie Mellon, but Mellon.
Yeah.
I forget his first name, but Mellon's his last name.
Yeah, and he actually did discover it first. But they had what looked like was going to be a depression under Harding, and then they zoomed right back out of it.
Oh my God, that's such a great story. I'm sure a lot of libertarian nerds know this story, but the Great Depression was 1929 to 1945. It depends on what you believe when it ended. In 1920, there was a more severe downturn in employment, downturn in the stock market, downturn in every indicator, really. Much more significant than the 1929 crash. And Harding did not do anything at all. One, he had scandals he had to deal with, like Teapot Dome and stuff. But there's a speech. He gives a speech where he says, we need to not do anything about this because that's going to make it worse.
Yep.
And then the Fed was brand new, so it didn't really know what it could do.
It
didn't know what caused it. It didn't know that it had all these things that it could do to make it be longer, so it didn't really do anything either. And it was done by 1921. It was over.
Yep.
And you had the roaring 20s.
And that's what happened under Reagan. So we go into that sharp recession, and then we get 7% annual growth throughout most of his tenure. And Art Laffer championed this the whole time he was being made fun of. If you ever are interested in this, read the book Econoclast. It tells the entire story from behind-the-scenes perspective. And Laffer literally says, we are going to have 1% inflation next year. He's in a meeting with Paul Krugman's in there, the intelligentsia. And we're going to have 1% inflation, and we're going to have 6% economic growth next year. And I forget who that's sitting on the council looks at him and goes, I will not put that on a report. I don't care what your formula says. I'll get laughed out of the meeting if I present this to the president. Sure enough, it was below his projection, but growth was higher, and he just nailed it. And that's what we need.
And the funny thing, a funny story about Reagan and how he reacted to all of the stuff during his first administration.
Well, I'm ready for a nap now.
Give me a president like that right now. Leaves it alone.
You know, they told him they told him when he was going through with all of his policy. They said, you know, this is going. You might not get reelected because of this. This is going to be painful. You're going to have a lot of people who hate you. And he said, if it's not us, then who is it? You know, and that's why he went through with it. He said, if we don't do it, then who's going to do it?
And it's like you've said so many times, all that really matters is productivity gains. Like, you can make GDP look like it's going up by increasing the monetary supply because inflation's part of it.
Yeah.
But Reagan understood, and this was Laffer's baby. He said, listen, we have to cut tax rates at the margin so that next dollar you earn, you get to keep more of it. So you're going to work more. you're going to go ahead and say, you know what, I'd rather have more dollars than just be comfortable where I am right now and decide to maybe not take that overtime so the economy could become more productive. The other part of it was they cut capital gains. The reason why was when you have huge inflation, you put your money in non-productive assets. At this time, Coke was going around buying vineyards. And they weren't even buying producing vineyards. They were buying vineyards that had storages of very in-demand wines that were very old. Because they knew they could just count on the inflation, that's going to go up 11%. So they didn't put it into new infrastructure, new facilities, new distribution systems. All that stuff that would have helped them be more productive, they ignored because they took the safe bet. Well,
yeah, I mean,
we have a hard asset, it's going up 11%. Why risk it?
If your money's becoming worthless, the best thing you can do is turn it into something that's worth something.
Like, exactly.
You buy stuff with it.
And that's when you see gold at $1,500 an ounce, the reason why is because people know it's a safe bet. It's better than investing in HP or Twitter.
And I'm just saying, Pogs are coming back any day now.
Yeah, we should sell wall Pogs.
I think the important the important thing for anyone to realize, and I'm not an investment advisor, so don't take my advice on investment, is that you know every single thing in this economy is in a bubble right now. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. The entire stock, you think the stock market is reflecting actual productive gains, actual gains of increased ability to produce goods and services, then you are in denial beyond your wildest dreams. The stock market is in a bubble. Education's in a bubble. Government's in a bubble. Heck, I'll get hated on it from my libertarian friends for this. I think Bitcoin is a bubble. You know?
Oh, it definitely is.
And there's everything. And it's not Bitcoin's a bubble because it's a bubble in the classic sense. It's a bubble because everything in our entire economy is a bubble.
It's why they said they created the Fed, because of the constant boom and busts. I mean, the Bitcoin is forever, and as long as it is in existence, it will boom and bust, and it will go from 1,000 to 500, well, yeah, and then 500 to 1,500, and then down to 1,000.
To get more nerdy, the people who defend the Fed on the idea, like they look at like the value of the dollar over time.
Do you want to
and it looks
Fed?
And it and you look at the value of the dollar over time after the Fed and then before it went up and down a lot. After it's more of a straight line
down,
but it's like price fluctuations are more in. There's not as much, and that's how they defend it, saying that this has created, you know, some stability, blah 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 blah. And the thing about that argument is that money is a good. It is something that's value changes. Value is, you know, you want to get economic theory. Value is subjective. It changes. People like something more. They like something less. The value changes. So money should go up. Prices should fluctuate a lot. That's their point. That's what prices do. They allocate resources amongst various different opportunities. And if in a dollar or a ounce of gold or whatever the money is, it's going to go up and down. And think for a minute about a society that doesn't have that happen. Think about for a minute if, you know, it happens with us because we mask these changes with devaluing the currency. So the price fluctuations are there. They're just being masked. Rothbard made the argument that the reason that there weren't any price, there wasn't any inflation during the Roaring Twenties, was because all this increased production should have made prices go down, but they stayed the same. So it was masked inflation, but that's what happens. But think of a world where that doesn't happen by itself. There is no central bank. It just doesn't happen. If that's what the central bankers wanted, let's say there was this magic world where it happened without them having to do anything. What that means is that nothing changes at all. Your values don't change. What you want to do, how many goods are in the society, how much stuff we have, technological advancement, none of that stuff happens. That's the only way you can actually naturally cause prices to stop fluctuating, is if everything is stagnant and there is no change. There is no life. If there is no life, there is no price change acting like something that's alive, because it's just a reflection of people. It's a reflection of people valuing different things differently. So, honestly, you know, central bankers, they're after some, like, for some reason, some weird, well, it's some weird fetish.
I get their intent.
Non-fluctuating prices.
I get their intent. The idea, like, when you have a depression, there are real human costs. There are people that are out of work. There are people that are not able to make rent and lose their home. And those things have a real human cost, and it is detrimental. So the thought is, I'll be honest, I thought Ben Bernanke, as much as I hated TARP in how they handled it and forcing the banks to sign it. I really think the system all the way comes down in that moment if they don't do it the way consumer confidence was going to go. And the amount, if the FDIC insurance is only as good as the United States government, the Federal Reserve, they were going to end up having to bail out the banks anyway through the FDIC, and that would have just been the American consumer who would have had, we would have had bank runs. They'd have taken anything over $100,000 in deposits out. So I get it. And so it is a human element there. That's why they do it. But they are so, it's that thing we've talked about before. Really intelligent people have this delusion that they can control and tweak and perfect society, that you're able to perfect it. And all you end up doing is creating even a worse scenario than if you had left it alone.
There's, even in economics and all of humanity, there's flows. I mean, you can try and harness energy, you can try and wrangle energy, you can try and harness the wind and change the wind, but ultimately you can't control energy, you can't control the wind, you can't control water, and you can't control gravity. You can defy it for a little bit, but eventually gravity gets the best of you. And it's the same with economics and free markets. You can't control free markets. You can't control human behavior. You can't control human flow. I mean, humans will always flow towards self-government. People want to govern themselves, and when they aren't able to govern themselves, they move to a place where they can govern themselves more freely. Who is moving towards North Korea? Who is moving from North Korea? So it's libertarianism is just the realization that human action is as predictable as gravity, as energy, as water, as wind. It's a natural resource that you can try and harness and you can try and move a little bit, but ultimately you can't stop, change, manipulate, or detract. And that is the folly of almost the entirety of human government.
Yep. Apparently you can't control cats either.
You can't control cats. Mittens, listen, I'm a very, very beautiful man to sometimes my wife, and all the time Mittens. She always wants to cuddle, so...
And that, I mean, I don't want to be the negative podcast, you know, because I like policy solutions and that type of thing. And for me, right now Yemen's an absolute nightmare. If something happens in the Middle East and there is a price shock on oil, and you have essentially the rest of the world is all pursuing the same policy we are by devaluing their currency in order to try to prop up the game a little bit longer. If this happens, you will see stagflation, and then you will see these misery indexes coming back. We can get things under control because we know what to do, and we need to do a flat tax. We need to do price targeting. We don't have to be on a gold standard because I think that was just not politically feasible. It's ideal. It's just not possible right now. But you can price target like Volcker did. When the price of gold got too high, he stopped the printing presses and raised rates. When the price of gold got too low, he ended up lowering rates to put money back into the economy and use that as a gauge. You can do things like this and take control of the situation, but there's just not the political will in Washington right now.
And there's not going to be. And that's the dilemma of, you know, Washington politics, is that it's easy to do things that are going to destroy everything, but it's hard to do things that are going to fix them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas.
Racism.
Happy New Year's. I feel like hanging myself now. Well, glad to have you back, Creighton.
Yeah, you're the one who started the economic talk.
I know. I knew we should have led with Duck Dynasty and race.
No, that's okay, because we haven't had a nice, strong, solid economic discussion since essentially the last time you were here, Creighton.
It's so nice to speak the language with somebody else on the podcast.
I'm very quiet during that segment because I'm paying attention. I'm listening to what's happening, but I just have nothing to add. Nothing that can compare to you two.
You made great strides though last week when we had that kind of that Bitcoin discussion after the podcast.
Yeah,
you got it. You nailed it.
No, I kind of get. I understand economics. I know economics.
But you explained it even.
Yeah, I can. It's not like algebra. I'm not a total functional illiterate when it comes to that. I can't do algebra or calculus. But no, I get economics. It just doesn't interest me.
Yeah, you still don't think it's the framework and ground floor of everything.
No, I get it. I just don't care. Like, I like a good old-fashioned racist argument.
Me
like,
too. For a second, I thought you were going to go down like an economic argument. A minute ago, you said human action. I was like, oh my God, he's been reading.
Uh-huh. Listen, I know my stuff.
No, it was totally
strategery.
No, it's you can explain human action in terms of Austrian economics if you'd like. Go ahead.
No, we don't need to. That's,
boom, roasted.
We have libraries that you can read if you want to learn that stuff.
And where can you find said libraries if you'd like to know more about economics?
The internet.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, there's a group here called the Liberty Fund here in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And they have a great website, the Online Library of Liberty. And you can get all kinds of free ebooks. You can go to Mises.org and get more libertarian, more Austrian economic ebooks than you could shake a stick at.
Well, he has a blog post that's from a very long time ago.
The last time he wrote.
Explaining Austrian economics. No, the last time was the Rand when he got emotional during the filibuster.
True. Oh.
He was.
Wait, the Austrian. Oh, man, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you wrote before. You explained Austrian economics.
Isn't it on the wall?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
No,
and it's it's the introduction to Austrian economics and the logic behind it and why it's way better than Keynesianism or any other model.
No, since you've been gone, I mean, working for the advocates and working on libertarianism.com, I spent months and months and months doing research, reading things that I didn't necessarily care to read. You know, reading things that you care to read that I'm just like, I would rather be watching Comedy Central right now. But no, I'm
very well versed. You're the type of person that. It's funny, you're the type of person that your job was targeted at getting involved.
Right. Yes, exactly right. I'm like,
What kind of...
Yeah, Liberty. Woo! Yeah. As long as that check cashes,
this, but can you tell me how to do it without, like, having to read anything?
But that's the point, is you need somebody like me who just wants to spend 5 minutes on certain things to fully understand it to create things like libertarianism.com, so it's easy, because part of the problem with some of the libertarian sites out there is that it's professorial. It's, you know, white guys in a tie talking for 45 minutes.
You're talking about a debate that's been had a lot recently is,
right.
You know, if it, the ones who think that it's, you know, the ones who make it professorial aren't doing it from like a, you know, a sense of, oh, well, this is just all we know, and that's just kind of...
Right.
They do it because if it's not professorial, then they don't think it's worth anything.
Right. And so what I tried to do with libertarianism.com through the advocates was make it much simpler, much easier, much more basic, and then give you a list of things that you can go look at if you're interested in those certain things. Like, and that's sort of, you know, even though I'm leaving the advocates and I'm leaving, you know, my current job to go work elsewhere.
Quitting Liberty, if you will.
That's right. I'm quitting Liberty.
To go after his dreams.
That's right. Yep. Get to work for the Bob and Tom Show. It's been amazing. But, you know, they're the people that they're talking to about replacing me are people that have taken my ideas in the past and have run with them and made them better. And, you know, that goal with the advocates is still going to continue where, you know, take these big ideas and make them easily accessible to people with an eighth grade reading level, you know, as opposed to trying to hit them with the word praxeological, you know, like,
well, it's a priori.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Plus it's just a 10-cent word.
Right, and that's sort of what we try to do here on our podcast, too, is try and make things accessible, you know? That's not like we're the be-all, end-all of all libertarianism, and we're not arrogant enough to say that...
Well, you are president of all of them.
That is true. I was once introduced by one Indianapolis City County Councilor to another City County Councilor as the president of all libertarians.
Period.
Yes.
Period. I mean... And how do you? I would walk around so arrogant all the time.
And he did not mean it as a joke. He was serious.
There's six of them, and they meet in a basement and podcast.
Right. So I am the president of all libertarians with a golden microphone. So we here try to make things easy, accessible, understandable. So you have a full picture in an hour or two, depending on how long-winded we are. And then you can go and tell your friends and get talking.
Get talking.
That's right. Hopefully you got talking about governmentless marriage, as we told you to last week.
Is that our new campaign now?
Oh, no. Did you see the
You are out
ads?
Of the loop, my friend.
Man, for a DC guy.
Yeah. Huh.
On Twitter, they were all these Twitter ads.
He only watches Duck Dynasty. That's all he watches.
I don't. I actually don't have cable.
Oh.
Yes. And
what?
It is liberating.
Yeah.
No. You're only
Get out.
You are like, you're in the Potomac fever is a real thing. And when you don't have TV, it becomes like,
TV.
What do you mean the rest of America isn't reacting to that poll on solar cells?
It's,
oh my God.
It's the 21st century, man. I got Netflix.
Oh,
it's true.
Okay.
I got Netflix, Amazon Prime, Instant Video.
Oh, you're good.
And broadcast TV.
So, there was these ads of this beta male.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, okay. I know what you're talking about. I have the internet, too.
Okay,
I
mean, all right. Yeah,
the interwebs. The
flannel and the metal glasses.
The 27-year-old guy who still lives in his mom's basement.
Right.
Yeah.
The millennial pseudo male.
He has a loft downtown.
Yeah.
He has a studio apartment downtown.
He's probably got nothing but Apple products.
Where, right. Fort Wayne?
Hey. Don't you make fun of Apple products,
you
bastard.
Look me in the eye and tell me that guy, does not have anything but Apple products.
He has nothing but Apple products, and he listens to...
Avett Brothers.
Prairie Home Companion.
Avett Brothers.
He listens to Fresh Air and the Avett Brothers every day. Avett Brothers is a little too mainstream now. And he goes to Starbucks.
It's acid.
No,
math.
Starbucks.
It's acid
he
math.
Uses his gold card.
No.
It's acid math folk rock. You probably wouldn't get
Starbucks
it.
Starbucks has become like where everyone works out of. Like, there aren't hipsters there other than the baristas anymore.
Right.
You got to go
true.
To like the independent, not for profit coffee
right.
house that charges more
the
for
free,
coffee.
The free range coffee.
Right. Yeah. The organic.
Pay whatever you think it's worth.
Right. Have you ever seen that show Portlandia?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You'd love it.
It is such a commentary on hipsters.
Oh,
it is. It
God
is
bless
like
them.
The first skit is they're at a restaurant and they want to get the chicken and they keep asking the waitress, "Was this chicken free range?" And like, "Oh yes, all our chicken is free range."
What's
chicken.
Its birth name?
What's its birth? Do you know its name? Like where was this farm at? How was the air? How was the air on this farm?
Right.
Then she comes back with a file on the chicken with a picture of the chicken.
Oh my God.
You'd love it. And it is irritating because Carrie Brownstein and Fred Armiston, who star in all these little skits, were these reoccurring characters. You can tell they're actually really like these people, but they don't take themselves so seriously because they're doing this show.
So is it mocking them or is it in support of?
It's mocking, but I think it's mocking from the perspective they're mocking themselves.
It's sort of like the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Self-deprecating.
Right. You know, where it's the Blue Collar Comedy Tour. They're really
They know they're not normal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is hilarious. I can't watch a ton of shows, but it is worth a view because you may find it hilarious. You and your trucker's hat and your...
No, this is in support of Phil Robertson.
Oh, okay. You're wearing
a
camouflage baseball hat.
Yep, just for
Thank
him.
God.
You know...
Now, he's a great American.
Great goddamn
American.
Oh,
you know, Maya, by the way, not happy with me.
Can
you believe it? Are you... Anyone
I
never would have thought that Maya would be... When I told Maya...
I would have been surprised if she was happy with you for anything.
Right. Yeah. Well,
I like that new... wall ornament you have.
I gave her like
oh my God
$500 worth of podcast equipment this week, so I've earned a favor.
Are you sure?
Yeah, no.
Try cashing that in.
Yeah, she made me banana pudding
for $500.
For $500, it was decent banana pudding.
Was it worth $500?
But she put it in a crystal bowl, a crystal goblet of sorts, which is the nicest thing she owns. So it's the small things that count, you know, those small bits of socialization that seem to creep in as I train her to be a real person.
You are covertly using force to bring her into society.
No, I just lended her all the old stuff as the Christmas bonus this year went to upgrading several pieces of our equipment here in Wallland. So she was not happy that we did an episode on gender roles and what else did we talk about last week?
The feminization of men.
Yeah, that we talked about gender roles without her. She's, you let the audience down. You didn't have an expert. Who wants to listen to three white guys talk about gender roles? Like, so only you are allowed to have an opinion. Only all white males who are straight are never allowed to have an opinion on anything ever. How dare you?
Transgender entitlement. I've been railing against it for years.
No, so,
just kidding.
No, I said, listen, if you listen to the show, and she said that would never happen. And I said, I know, then you'd be supportive because we did mention what you would believe, what you would say. But there is one aspect of the Phil Robertson thing that kind of speaks to this that has bothered me. So it's the Phil Robertson comments on race. Okay, listen, I found his comparison of homosexuality to bestiality and terrorism to be ridiculous, offensive, not really offensive, because really, is anybody ever really offended by anything? But I could see how you'd find that offensive if, you know, if you're offended by such things. But I wasn't really surprised that he held those views.
I could see how you'd find that offensive if you found that offensive.
Right. Listen, I'm not offended by really anything. Like, the last time I was offended by anything was when the local KFC took macaroni and cheese off their menu. Like, that was offensive.
We're talking about that now?
Yeah.
We're talking about this
yeah.
now?
I got all the quotes.
This is my thing. You found it offensive. Don't care.
Right.
Like, stop using you're offended as an argument.
You're telling me that some 65-year-old cracker from the Louisiana swamps, who is basically a professing Christian who has one of the few TV shows that is a Christian TV show that doesn't mock Christians.
And let's
opinion?
Yeah, and like I was saying in the chat the other day, he is a good kind of Christian. I mean, yeah, okay, he isn't the kind that, you know, if you don't agree with Christians' teachings on certain things, then you're not going to like him because, I mean, that's just the scripture. You don't like scripture. I mean, you're not going to like him.
Tough.
But when you have Phil Robertson versus Fred Phelps, and, you know, preacher who goes off and gets a hooker or something.
John Hagee.
Yeah, I mean, when you have these as the representation of Christians, and you see a guy who's like most Christians where, I mean, he came from a bad place. I mean,
made something of himself.
He's a self-made man. If you read the comments, while he may have lacked tact, he straight up says, it's not my place to judge. You know?
You know, I'd never harm anybody for having a different opinion. I'll never disrespect people who have a different lifestyle or opinion than me. I mean, even Gina, our most rabid, hardcore LGBTQ activist, other than Maya, because Maya is just black and white on everything, said, I read it. I didn't really give two craps about it. So we didn't really get into a lot of it because it's his right to say it. Nobody should be shocked by it. And A&E has every right to drop them if they feel like it.
Yeah. So that brings up a couple points. One, the free speech argument on the part of people who agree with them. Stop it because you're making yourself look stupid. I understand that I will agree that I think there is a double standard. I think there is a double standard. People who have beliefs that he does do not get as much of a fair treatment in, you know, popular media as people who have opposing views than him. But that's just the name of the game. If you're a private company and most private companies tend to be, most private media tends to be left-leaning, I mean, that's how you're dealt with it. I mean, you know, be Glenn Beck and go start your own network and, you know.
Kill it.
And beat it. But I think I do think that the one thing that I've been really focused on with this whole thing is I like how, you know, refreshing it is to know that there are, you know, Christians out there who are, you know, I guess popular Christians that say that are out there in front of people all the time and aren't total douches. I mean, most Christians, like I said, that are out there making waves are the kind like Fred Phelps. They're making waves because they're just out beyond the pale of crazy and douchebaggery. Whereas Phil Robertson, I mean, his comments, while you may disagree with him, because let's be clear what he said. He said, this is what the scripture says. I personally don't understand, but it's not my place to judge. That would break it down. Yes, he did compare it to bestiality and stuff, and that's
the B bomb.
But to him, it was his explanation of this. Of he was comparing it to bestiality in the sense that all sins are sins. You know, lying is the same as bestiality according to his comments. So that's where he was coming from with it. And while you may not agree with it, because you know, I mean, fine. That's his opinion, and that's. He was basically saying objective things about what the scripture says about homosexuality. He wasn't out there saying we're going to burn them at the stake. He wasn't saying that they're going to burn in hell and all this kind of stuff. He was just saying, I don't understand it. This is what the scripture says. Let God sort them out.
It's not my particular brand of vodka.
But there was one aspect that I want to cover in it, and we didn't really dive into it last week, so I want to talk about a little bit about it, which was his comments on race.
And this is, I'm going to read it. And can I read Jesse Jackson's response?
Oh,
I thought
please.
This was
please.
So,
are you going to read it in his voice?
Please, dear sweet baby Jesus, read.
That'd be racist, Creighton.
Jesse Jackson's
response. While we're here today on this particular mission, I will never know.
Oh, man.
Go for it.
All right. I never with my eyes saw the mistreatment of any black person. Not once. Where we lived was all farmers. The blacks worked for the farmers. I hoed cotton with them. I'm with the blacks because we're white trash. We're going across the field. They're singing and happy. I never heard one of them, one black person, say, I'll tell you what, these doggone white people, not a word. Pre-entitlement, pre-welfare. You say, were they happy? They were godly. They were happy. No one was singing the blues. It could have been done much more sensitive.
I don't think so. I think here's where I think there's racism. Okay, now this is me, white honky man, giving my opinion on this. You know, I wouldn't defend him if I thought that he were out of bounds, but people are looking at this. I was listening, actually. The reason I had wanted to bring this up, so I was listening to Kevin Smith's Smodcast, his podcast, and he was just going off. He had read the comments, and he's like, you know, I don't agree with his comments on race. It's just outrageous what he said, but, you know, he has a right to say them. And when you really listen to that, what he is saying is, you know, they were calling him a fool. They were calling him an old timer who has these outdated views on race. What I get from his comment there is that he is sharing his personal experiences during a time period in the South where things were tumultuous. He is saying that I know that there was an environment where these things happened, but I never personally saw it. He is not saying that they should have been harmed and that he should have been in the Klan or any of that, or that he's saying there, you know, that these things never happened and none of this ever existed. What he's saying is, I personally never experienced any of that. I never saw any of that. I saw people that were happy with life, and, you know, we were equals because I was poor, they were poor, but because of God, we were all happy and enjoyed life. And so I just think it's a weird thing that because he said something about his experiences that went against the cultural, the conventional wisdom of a time period, he is somehow a racist. Like, I think that's really unfair, and I think that's pretty ridiculous when a guy just says, these were my experiences, and that makes him a racist because it doesn't go with...
Because he wasn't on the bus in Montgomery.
Your traditional... Yeah. Views.
And I think there's a couple points there. One, I think, is just on the part of people who the politically correct culture has conditioned everyone, and I said this the other day in the chat, it's conditioned everyone to just react like crazy to anything that goes against the conventional wisdom whatsoever.
Well, you have to default to the left's point of view or what the media says.
It's just, it doesn't matter how bad it is. It could be, I mean, it's like there's a line. Here at this spot past the line, you may have, you're creeping on territory that is slightly politically incorrect. You're maybe saying that the welfare state is not good for a specific race for whatever reason. You know, it's very, you're not saying anything bad about a person's skin color or sexual orientation, but you're in that same ballpark. You're getting there. And then there's straight up, you know, Klan member. You know, that whole stretch, that whole spectrum immediately gets met with the response of, this guy is crazy, he is outrageous and offensive, and he needs to be banned from ever being seen in the public view ever again.
His comments are so offensive and outrageous that he is clearly a Klan member because he's white and Southern.
Yeah, and it's like, that's one thing. And two, I think, I made this point back home. I think the reason that we're seeing so much of this incredible overreaction on race, everything's racist. I mean, it's everything's racist. Being white is racist now. I mean, you're born white, you're a racist by default. And it's because you don't get black people because you're not black. I mean, that you're racist for being white. I think that the reason that's happening is because real racism, like hosing down people in the South and sicking attack dogs on them, doesn't happen anymore. So there's they have to complain about something. People on the left intelligentsia, the people who have politically correct culture, they have to complain about something. They have to. And the only thing left to complain about are trivialities that it's ridiculous. It's like
There's a new term out called microaggressions.
Oh, my God.
And I just read about this recently where it is things that happen on a small scale that are offensive. Like, there was one Asian girl who talked about how she was called, was told in school that she smelled like rice. You know, things like that that are offensive because of her race, because of her, but it's become like a whole thing now. It's become, you know, you've been, but when we talked to Harry two episodes ago, who is black, he's not African American, he said, don't ever say that to me. He said, listen, people don't come up and mistreat me. People don't say racist things to me. But people do treat me differently because I am black. People are careful around me to not be offensive, to not go out of their way. And that feels really weird because I just want to be treated like everybody else. So, you know, he's not the type of person who can't take a joke. He's not Melissa Harris Perry, where it's like it's an industry. You know, where he's just like, listen, I just want to be treated by everybody. Everybody take a chill pill.
We're all Americans. Let's move past it.
Right.
You know?
So
I think there's a generational gap here. I think people my age, you know, I was never raised in 1950 South. You know, I didn't come from that. I'm not a black person who came from that. I'm not a white person who came from that. So my experience with black people, with race, culture, and all that has been very much, you know, they're just people. I mean, they're the same level as me. They're another person. And but that's just how I was raised.
All of our schooling, and you and I have the same exact schooling, where everybody is to be treated equally. Everybody is to be treated with respect. Nobody is different in any way. And so, like, it's really weird to grow up, you know, as a child, you have all these friends of different heritages, and 40% of our generation is of mixed heritage. And then you grow up and become an adult, and all of a sudden, like, that whole we're all equal thing is not true. Not on our perspective, but because we're, like,
and
you know,
the way I look
into
at
the world that existed before we grew up.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. Is like, for me, I can only assume that I can only speak from my own experience. If there's more people my age out there who have the same kind of ideas, where it's just like, you know, black guy's a black guy. I don't care. He's a black guy. He's a white guy, you know.
Why does he got to be a white guy? Why does he got to be a black guy?
There's a white guy. There's a black guy. I don't care. They're both people.
Just two guys.
No one's better than the other. If that's how I look at it, and I assume there's a lot of people my age that look at it, you got to expect that that's just going to be how everybody naturally feels. So when I go out there and I see, you know, people saying that it's still 1950s South and we're still hosing people down on the streets, I kind of just have to look at it as it's like, you can't honestly be coming from a perspective of wanting, of actually fighting. You can't be serious. It's
and
like,
there are those real, there are small pockets that still
there
exist.
I mean, don't totally get me wrong. Yeah. Racism is not eradicated. No. I'm not saying that there is no racism left.
And I don't
but
mean
it's
to
not institutionalized for sure.
Right. And I don't mean to marginalize the microaggressions thing, but it's like, you know, it does bring awareness to the fact that it's like, it's not okay to say these certain things. It's not okay to do these certain things.
This is the way I look at it. Is like, if you can talk, if like you have a friend that is a minority of any type, woman, black, Asian, whatever, any type of minority, and you can make jokes to them about their minority and they're okay with it, then who cares?
I think here's what I really, the way that I feel about it. Everybody grows up with something different about them. I was always the fat kid, you know? And yes, I was a large child.
I remember you.
Yeah, I felt like a fat kid. But I was bullied. But, you know, Greg's was that he was a chronic alcoholic.
No, I didn't drink until college.
Oh.
Actually, until I was about 21, actually.
It was his rampant sexual harassment in elementary school.
Yeah, yep.
You know, everybody's got something different about them. And part of childhood and middle school and somewhat high school is just that people are cruel to each other, and they use their differences, and like that's sort of what we've had this conversation with Maya about. It's like, it's not okay to bully anybody because they're different. So what we're really talking about is not racism, it's bullying. It's the fact that you're trying to make someone feel less than because of this prominent thing about them, you know what I mean? So,
but the thing about bullying is it is a malicious thing. It is bad intent. You have ill intent involved in bullying.
You're trying to make someone feel like...
I actually read an article the other day about how these various sayings we have racist roots. Mm-hmm. Like how some of these things, and I can't remember off the top of my head what some of them are, It was along the lines of, like, the rule of thumb comes from a judge saying you couldn't beat your wife with a stick bigger than your thumb. I mean, it was that kind of stuff. All these different sayings came from less than respectable backgrounds. And they're being said nowadays, and the argument was that you need to stop saying these things because they have these bad...
Redskins.
These bad, yeah, they have these bad roots. And I was like, I didn't know that. I could probably bet that most people don't know that. So when they say these things to somebody, they have zero ill intent. They don't mean anything bad at all. It's just a turn of phrase. Is that really racist? Are you really trying to demean someone based upon their skin color? Are you really trying to make them feel like a bad person or that they're less than you because of their skin color? If you don't get that that has racist roots, and they probably don't know that it has racist roots, and you're two people talking about each other, and there's absolutely no under... There's no... It's like you have to inject this from outside in order for it to be a bad conversation, for it to be bad. It's just stuff like that. It's like everything is racist now. Everything is racist. That even things that have no intent to be racist are now racist. You had to make them racist. Like, when they happened, they weren't racist. But now that you saw them happen and you talk about them later, now it's racist. And it's just, it's lampooned. If everything's racist, then nothing is racist.
And that's something I've said before. I believe racism
has... That was
deep,
by the way.
Well, it's true. If everything's racist, then
nothing.
What you're doing is you're demeaning, like, the level of things, like, you know,
things that are
real racism.
Yeah, you're demeaning it. You're bringing it down to a level and saying that this is the same as calling somebody a bad name. If this is the same, you know, you're saying that putting attack dogs on people and hanging them from a tree because they're black, that is now on the same level as making a quip about stereotype.
Well, you went to the Washington Redskins game, so clearly your grandfather pushed the Cherokees on the Trail of Tears. Clearly.
Yeah.
No, but
it really brings it down to a level, and it doesn't do justice to real racism, to the struggles that real people have gone through to get to a position of equality in America. When there, I mean, it's come to the point where there is literally no way that we can get to the equality level that people that push this kind of stuff want. I mean, there is no natural equality amongst people at all. I mean, I can make jests and jives about people that I know based upon whatever the heck, you know, their personality is. Like, I just messing with them, jesting, like friends do. And, you know, to get rid of that kind of stuff seems to be the prerogative of people who push this politically correct culture. And it's like you're asking for something that literally is never going to happen, not because people are evil and because racism is so entrenched in our culture, but because you're asking people to not have personalities at all. It's not like they hate each other when they talk to each other like this. They're just friends, and they talk like friends do to each other. It's not... It's stupid. And what it... Like I said, it's bringing down...
I don't think anybody's asking for permission to be offensive. It's a matter of, like, everybody just kind of chilling out. You know, if we all could just stop, like...
Overreacting.
Stephen Horowitz made it... We posted it on the wall, and I posted it on Facebook, and he made a great comment on Christmas Eve. And he said, you know what? I am not of the Christian faith. I don't celebrate Christmas. I have no use for Christmas. I don't really care. And I don't really care if you celebrate what I celebrate. But the fact is that I like the break on Christmas. The whole world takes a day or two off, and they focus on something else. They focus on peace, and it gives people an opportunity to just be at peace with each other for at least one day. And maybe if we have more of those type of days, people will realize that being peaceful towards one another is really great, and that we should strive for that the other days of the year. You know, and I watched this documentary last night on Netflix called Becoming Santa, and it's about this guy who tries to become a Santa, and they were talking about the Santa Claus situation. You know, and Santa Claus in our culture represents generosity. He represents hope. He represents this spirit,
noble lie.
The spirit of giving. Yeah, but it's a cultural icon that represents goodness.
Oh, great.
You know, how many things in our society in this day and age are we not trying to tear down? It's just like every institution, every cultural icon, every little thing that is good has to be sullied and torn down and ripped to shreds and analyzed. And we have to find the one negative thing about them. It's like, Santa is one of those things that people, there's black Santas, white Santas, there's Jewish Santas, there's Christian Santas, there's Muslim Santas. You know, it's like, it's a cross-cultural thing, and it represents giving to each other. You know, it represents this great quality of human nature. And, like, it's just a nice thing. And, you know, but then there are people who just, well, we've got to get rid of Santa. We got to, you know, and Christians are part of it, too. It's like, well, we can't have Santa because it'll interfere with Christmas. It's Christmas. You can't say happy holidays. It's got to be Christmas. Like, never mind the fact that it's happy holy days.
Yeah.
You jackass.
I love that.
Like,
it's holy day, and then take a step further. The people, if atheists are the ones who are pushing it, you know, ignoring the fact that the 7-day week comes from the Bible and all these various little things about our calendar. It's like,
it's just, you know what?
Like, come on.
Here's our Christmas message from We Are Libertarians. Let's just appreciate Christmas. Not because it's a Christian holiday and you've got to do this. It's because it's the one day of the year. Like, yesterday, I hid anybody who made any kind of political status because I just don't want it. I don't want it on that day. I don't want to see it. Your socially ineptitude is ridiculous. You shouldn't be making political statuses on a day where it's just like, just be. Just relax. You know what? I like my family. I like being around my family. I like going to see my family. If you have a problem with me talking about that because you hate your family or you like working, I don't care. I don't want to hear it. I live my life the way I live my life, and if you don't like it, shut up. I don't tell you that you have to go see your family. You know, it's just like these, everybody thinks that everybody's got to be like them, you know, and I'm certainly guilty of it. I, you know, make you guys all put on khaki shorts and tie-dye before you walk into my apartment, but that's the price you pay.
Do you wear that to work?
No, not anymore.
Not anymore. When I was in a very less serious job as executive director of the Libertarian Party.
I figured that'd be in your contract.
Yeah.
I will work for you as long as I can wear tie-dye.
But
I'll work for free as long as it's tie-dye.
Like, I just feel like yesterday was just great because nobody was fighting with anybody on Facebook. Nobody was fighting with anybody about anything. They were doing it in the privacy of their own home
with their family, who right. they hate.
You know, it's just a day to be. And I think if we had less politics, if we had less government where people had to fight with each other for their personal values, then we'd have more days like yesterday where everybody is just relaxed and focused on things that matter, focused on giving, focused on building good relationships, focused on trying to escape their mother's house.
And the giving is the most important aspect, I think, from a libertarian perspective, because what you witness on a day like Christmas is how effective it is to be community-oriented and within your personal network and the effects that giving has on those individuals. Like, you know, the angel tree, like we talked about last week.
Right.
Feeding a family on Christmas. That is not something where you need a legislative body, where you need an agency telling you how to do it. You see them, you encounter those individuals, and the most effective way to do it is for you to go and help them.
If you listened to Storytime with Gina last week, you know a member of our family here went to private charities to help with their Christmas this year. And, you know, that person took a whole armload of stuff from my house to go to their place. They didn't need the government to do it because a need was recognized and help was given. And it's not because I'm some sort of stellar person. It's because I'm a human being looking at another human being that wants help. And most human beings are exactly like that. Even your most, you know, corroded, cynical, politically motivated person like me can become giving at Christmas time. But
you're one of the real Christians, that corroded, cynical types.
Right. But no, I just think that if we spent more time focusing on the positive aspects of everything, instead of fighting about every little thing and trying to make everything divisive and tear down every institution, it's like, you know what? People like Christmas. People like going to church. People like Duck Dynasty. And if you don't like that, they don't like that, just be quiet.
That'd be
you
really know? Cool.
It doesn't mean that you can't have an opinion about the fact that the guy said something incredibly bigoted about the bestiality, terrorism, homosexuality stuff. It was bigoted. He was wrong. It was inappropriate. And he should be called out for it. You know, but you know, I don't know. It's a whole, the world is just weird and sucks.
Well, no, it's very intense now. News cycles are extremely short and extremely intense. There's no, I'm going to read the evening news on the way a train ride home from work with my, you know, Don Draper jacket on and just, you know, just decompress. Now it is, oh my God, did you see this on Drudge? Did you see that link? How did you miss that link? Oh my gosh, you got to read this. You're going to be so upset. And then all social media does is amplify that sensation. It becomes, oh my gosh, I have to outdo what someone else said as funnier, as more up to date, as more in the know. And it's this cycle of intensity that you never really get to unplug from.
Yep. Good call. I was trying to get my cat's ass out of your face.
Well, you know.
Like, you soldiered through that last comment with my cat's ass in your face. What is it about cats that they think that's, like, the highest honor? It's like, look, I love you. You're my favorite. You want to see my asshole?
Uh-huh. Well, apparently, she doesn't support my Phil Robertson hat.
Right.
Because, you know.
She was
she
just
put the butthole in my face.
Right. No, but I'm saying that's an honor.
It's an honor.
For cats, that is an honor. You are welcome to my household. Take a look at this.
It's funny, too, though. Phil Robertson represents mainstream America.
Yep.
He represents 50% the average
voter of this country. Most, I think the study was 47% of the people that were polled agreed with his point of view.
Yep. And on race, racism has lost its meaning. And in Animal Farm by Orwell, right? Where words stop meaning things.
Right,
that's where we're at. They don't even know what it means. Yeah, no. Animal Farm is a short story from like.
Yeah, no. I know what Animal Farm is, but isn't 1984 the one with Newspeak and all that kind of
stuff?
Yeah.
They bring that up in that as well. But we've lost words like racism doesn't mean anything anymore, and that's why when there is a chance for it to mean something, it is to the trenches.
Yep.
Because they got to fundraise on something, or otherwise it's going. Melissa Harris Perry is going to have fewer viewers, which she can't afford.
Even words like awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome is awe. Some. It inspires awe. It is glorious and magnificent and enormous. And it's now used to describe, like, that pizza that you brought tonight, Greg, was awesome.
It was a solid 6.
It was a good, solid 6.5 pizza. It was not an awe-inspiring pizza. You know, it's just, our language today is just so polluted. But anyways, look at the Potomac Fever that this guy brought in. All of a sudden, we're old white men bitching about everything.
No, I'm just letting you guys go at it. Yeah. Me and Greg had the economics thing. I'm letting you go.
Yeah.
I got it.
All right, so.
Well, I was going to comment, too, one thing on Jesse Jackson is he debated 2 years ago Dinesh D'Souza. Do you know Dinesh?
Yeah, he's the guy who made the crazy.
2016.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is actually kind of shockingly. I mean, it was propaganda 101, that movie was. But his thoughts on the Middle East were spot on. I mean, spot
on. He's not a man without intelligence.
No.
He's written, I read Letters to a Young Conservative, which was pretty good. Dinesh D'Souza is not a bozo.
So he debates with Jesse Jackson, and he looks at Jesse, and he goes, look at your palms. They are the same color as mine. I can tell you, I went to a Northeastern liberal elitist school, Dartmouth. I didn't experience the racism. Maybe you did, but we are no different from our skin color, and I don't run into the things you pretend exist. But to Jesse Jackson's credit, he was like, that's because racism has moved underground. And I mocked that position for quite some time until Harry was on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Harry talked about how he gets treated differently, I was like, well, maybe Jesse Jackson's honest. Maybe it's something to consider. Maybe that's something we need to be more. I mean, and I've said this jokingly before, but like if I don't make a joke or make a stereotypical stupid joke to their face, am I being racist by stomaching that?
Right. Like just, yeah, because I make fun of you quite often.
Yeah.
Greg.
Yeah.
Creighton is a frequent punching bag. We do that because we know he doesn't listen.
what?
But,
what?
No, yeah, I thought it was an interesting, and I wondered because, you know, I've had that conversation with Maya, where Maya certainly has much more bigotry thrown at her than, you know, someone like Harry or someone, you know, of other minorities. Like, within the LGBTQ community, trans people are even, you know, other LGBTQs are bigoted.
The black sheep.
Or the bigoted towards trans, honestly.
Yeah.
If you go back and listen to the Creating Maya podcast, you know, and she says all the time, it's like, I constantly think every social interaction that I have, I know someone is treating me differently than if I were just Chris Spangle or Greg Lenz. You know, and that to me is unfortunate. It's, you know, I don't know how to cure that. You know, the way that I cure it is that I get to know somebody like Maya. And I go delve into every inner deep thought that that person has because I want to understand who Maya is.
And you're Machiavellian.
But,
all right. No, just kidding.
I needed the Westies to go be my enforcer.
Let's play devil's advocate here. I mean, everyone acts differently around everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't act the same. I don't talk to my mom the same way I'm going to talk to, you know, one of my roommates. You know, I mean, yeah, that may not be dependent on, like, you know, their lifestyle, how they were born, all this kind of stuff. And I get it. Some people...
Yeah, but it's different where it's like, it's the questioning of the very fabric of your personhood, of who you are, where I can't really explain it to you. Maya and Harry can explain it a little bit better, but...
Well, I know. I pulled punches, never wanted to make... I mean, it was out of fear, not because I wanted to treat her any differently. I was just afraid I'd get hit.
Right.
See, that's the thing that gets under my skin is that I don't have any... Like, I don't think any less of other black people, of Hispanics, of gay people. I don't think they're any less bad. Like, they're bad people or anything. But I still have to react. I have to act differently around them. Maybe not people that we know relatively well, but I have to react differently around them. Not because I think anything less of them, but because I know there will be repercussions if I don't.
But
that's what gets under my skin, and that's what I think the politically correct culture has brought about is acting differently around people when you don't personally have any qualms about who they are as a person, but you don't want to, you know, step over that line on accident. And
right, you don't want to offend anybody. You don't want to make someone feel uncomfortable. And as we've talked with Maya and Harry, the very act of trying to make someone feel less uncomfortable makes them feel uncomfortable because you're treating them differently. And so that's what Jesse Jackson's talking about,
yeah,
is that racism is going underground.
And that's where I thought, at first I mocked him. I was like, that's crazy. And then, you know, after that last podcast, I was like, man, that's interesting. He might have been right on that one.
As always, at the end here, we talk about what we may have missed, anything you'd like to promote.
Oh.
Let's start with Greg Lenz.
No, I think we did a good job covering everything. If you made it to the race part, by God, thank you, because we went on an economic, we went way down the rabbit hole.
I think people are never going to make it to the end of this, and they're going to stop and not hear the nuance at the end and just can be convinced that this is the most racist podcast ever.
Do some world-class editing and maybe flip the two topics.
Yeah, well, that might not help.
However, Josiah Crones, our master troll lately.
No,
hold on, I'm going
to
be nice.
No, I don't want you to be nice. Josiah Crones, you are my least favorite listener. You are the worst listener that the We Are Libertarians podcast has.
Well, he messaged me, and he was listening to our podcast last week, which thank you for listening.
No, stop.
All he said was he agreed with me on gender roles.
Uh-huh.
And all I'm saying is he is not my least, well, he's not my least favorite, he's my second least favorite.
You know what I
he's
said
1B.
About... throwing baby out with the bathwater. You're off the podcast. I hate you. Josiah Crones.
Why do you hate reparations?
He might as well be Canadian.
I don't even know what's going on.
No, there's this one listener.
Potato grower.
This one waterhead named Josiah Crones. That's not racist. That's an old school term.
Yeah, for mentally challenged.
Oh, well, maybe I'll edit that part out. There's this...
You ever see Clerks too?
Uh huh.
No.
But he listens to the Kevin Smith podcast.
Oh my God.
All right, so there's this one.
That's not racist.
There's this one listener named Josiah Crones, if that is your real name, who made it his mission to call me a fat on one of the photos, which I thought was. I made a joke about mittens, and then Greg went nuclear on him. Thank you, sir.
Hey, you hit my friends. My NAP position applies
to
everything. You hit me once, your civilization ends.
But since then, I've let it go, and he and I have become Facebook friends, and we chat every once in a while. So I jokingly say he's my least favorite listener, but he was there for about 5 minutes. So and
just wanted to give him a shout-out.
Right.
Thanks for the message.
So go F yourself.
San Diego.
He knows I'm kidding. Creighton, anything you'd like to promote? Anything you'd like to say to the audience? Will you be joining us now that we're moving our show to Saturdays?
I hope so, if you guys give me the heads up.
Yeah, I've got to get you a mic, too.
Yeah, well, I have a mic. Maybe not to your standards.
Yeah, we need you to get a nice mic so the audience can hear your dulcet tones.
What the hell is
that? I know what your next post should be. The Libertarian's Guide to Working Out. Yeah. That should be it. You should blog post.
Do you even lift, bro?
I do lift. I've exercised since I went out there. Thank God.
Would you like to tell the ladies? Would you bench?
Nah, I'm not going to be that narcissistic.
Come on.
Just saying, you owe it to yourself to be healthy. So
it ends in a three, and it starts with a three and ends with a 30.
You owe it to yourself to be healthy. So make sure you exercise. And that's as far as I'm going to go into it.
All right. Anything else?
If you are a member of Young Americans for Liberty and you listen to this podcast, keep your eye on the state conventions coming around next semester.
Are you coming back for that, by the way? For the ones in the Midwest?
There's not going to be one hosted by... Well, there might be one, but it's not going to be one that we're working on directly at National in Indiana.
When's your next one that you're going to come to the Midwest for it?
There will be two in the Midwest, Midwest region, but not one that... I'm not coming to Indiana, basically.
But what states are you coming to?
Wisconsin and Michigan.
Since you've left, this has become a national show.
Oh, it has?
It has.
Oh, it has. You know what? Did I tell you about this? This was probably right when my internship started. So this was back in, like, June or July. I was calling through all the new people who joined Young Americans for Liberty as dues-paying members. You know, you join and we're supposed to give you a call and just thank you for joining and stuff. And there was a guy, I said, hey, my name is Creighton Harrington. He's like, what's your name? I said, Creighton Harrington. He's like, I know you. You're on We Are Libertarians.
Yeah.
And this guy was in Utah.
Yeah. If you look at the numbers, we've really grown, like, since we really started trying last year. So, like, early January, you know, you started coming on right in January, and, you know, that's when we really started trying as a podcast, and we went from 72...
Because let's be clear, prior to January,
right.
We just didn't try.
Trying, yeah, right. I mean, we didn't do show prep, it was basically you, me, and Galt.
Well, I still don't do show prep.
Well, yeah, neither do I. but... You, Galt,
show prep today was PBR and pizza.
Right. Galt, you and I would sit down and just start talking. And some of those early episodes are very, very good, very philosophical, less topical. And we kind of retooled last January, started the website, started promoting it. You know, we had about 70 to 100 listeners every show. That's the audience that we built up to December of last year. Because this time last year, we were saying goodbye, and it was just you and I in the old office on that podcast.
Yeah, it was right after Ron retired.
Right. And then since then, in the past year, we've gone from about 100 listeners to over 1,000 listeners a show from around the world. About 600 subscribers. It floats. It varies. So, but the average listen per show, if you add in Stitcher and... regular podcast is around 1,000 people. So it's a very, very cool. It's a great honor for us. We thank you. We ask you to please continually sharing. Please keep listening unless you're Josiah. just kidding. We've really taken off. Ron Paul, the interview helped. Some of the interviews helped. What was the thing recently that really... like helped with, oh, it was Thomas Woods, Woods thing. We added a bunch of subscribers thanks to him putting us in his feed. So the next episode of We Are Libertarians, episode 72, will feature Walter Block. Block's going to come and hang out during the show. We're going to send Creighton on his way.
So technically the interview episodes are no longer the Shill Report.
No, the Shill Report is no longer with us due to work circumstances. So... we have really the only... honestly, if we were to place a bet, would you say that Storytime with Gina would be the longest-running We Are Libertarians podcast after We Are Libertarians?
Not in a million years.
I mean, it's been, trust me, it's been a life support several times, but...
It helps that it's kind of, well, we're already here and the equipment's
right,
out.
Right, yeah.
That's
but
what she said.
The show report.
Well, I mean, I'm up.
The show report passed on due to work circumstances. Joe Ruiz.
He joined the Democrat Party again, right. In case anyone was wondering.
He did?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
I completely could have believed that.
No, Ryan got a really, really great job. We're really happy for him, but it just kind of conflicted with his ability to to do the show. Joe Ruiz is going to start a new podcast here very soon. He just bought himself a brand new shiny set of equipment.
I had no idea. Good for Joe.
Yeah, and so he will be doing more podcasting here soon. Rob Kendall got a job with the state, and so he wasn't able to do podcasting anymore.
Yeah, we can't have
best libertarian ever.
I really wouldn't you literally consider that a statist?
Well,
literally,
well, he doesn't. Statist. I don't believe he works there anymore. But Rob Kendall's on the Brownsburg Town Council and appointed a libertarian to one of their boards.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So,
all right,
we did a
He's
big
a plant.
Shout. Yep, a big shout out to our buddy Rob, and hopefully he can resume his show soon. Let's see, who else? Maya was forced out of podcasting due to several events that she covered on the last episode of The Uncontrollables. Creating Maya just sort of ran its course and, you know, was great for the episodes that it was. And you can go back and listen to all these shows at WAL-radio.com. But we've got a few new shows that we're working on for the new year. We've got... Harry Price is going to be doing more with us. We loved when Harry was on, so we're going to ask him to help create some shows. You know, we've got the Brothers Peffers coming on more frequently, and hopefully we can get them, you know, doing a show of some sort as well as We're Libertarians. So a lot of things that we're working on.
I just remembered, it's like Reddit for your ears.
Yeah. The Nearly Total Nonsense podcast that is still out there. You can still go listen to it.
Is
yeah.
more effective than the 24 or than the, any pill, any yeah. birth control.
It was. I gotta give
any Galt, pill that phrase right there.
Listen, I gotta give Galt credit. Reddit. When he came up to me the first time and he said, "I want to do a podcast. I know it's not worked out on Wall. I want to do something." Okay, what do you want to do? All right. Well, I don't know what we're gonna call it, but it's like Reddit. For your ears. And he put his, he did like little jazz
And not
hands.
A baby was born in the entire city of Indianapolis for like 9 months.
It was, I'll tell you what though, it was an abomination of a show. It had the best tagline of any podcast I've ever heard in my life.
It still makes me cringe a little bit when I hear it. Not joking, I'm a little uncomfortable. I'm agitated right now.
You can go listen to that podcast, and I'm fairly certain there are certain things at play during Nearly Total Nonsense, but it's still on iTunes. You can still go check it out. So if you want, it's an hour of Reddity goodness.
Oh gosh.
Come on. That is a great tagline.
Have you been on Reddit?
Yeah. They'd hate it.
Yeah.
That's why it's a great tagline.
Oh.
Yeah, Reddit is an abomination before yeah. the Lord.
You know what? It's a meta Reddit for your ears. It's right. not even a Reddit. It's worse than that.
He didn't say it was 4chan for your ears.
Oh, God.
So that's like James Neese.
Do you still have that picture of my grandma, by the way?
I don't know. You guys have probably saved that and copied it 8 times over. Oh. It's like the best
no,
joke of all time.
I photoshopped your face on it.
Yeah. He also made the same exact meme with Rick Santorum and then posted it to the Facebook page. And
it
I made him
took
take it
off
down.
And he made me take it down.
Yeah.
I mean, it exploded in likes and shares. And then he's like, "Take it down. I'm getting messages. That's some poor taste."
I got equal hate mail about it too.
That
it
was so. That's so funny that's so legendary because it really was such a spontaneous.
So spontaneous.
I still cry every time I look
just,
at it.
By happenstance, that was the first thing I saw.
Oh, we're not even going to tell you where to find it. So
4chan.
4chan or Greg Lenz's Twitter photos.
Oh, yeah.
You'll figure it
go
out.
Go with yep. caution.
Trust
if
me.
If you don't know what 4chan is, go with caution.
You once you see it, you'll know exactly what it is. So, was it you that didn't
you
know
can't
what 4chan
say that
was?
About
I didn't. That's how
you
it all happened.
You can't say that about 4chan, though. Like, you'll see, you when you know it, you'll see it. Because they'll go
no.
on 4chan, and they're like, "That must be it. Oh my God, that must be it. Holy crap, that has to be it."
No, I meant if you went to Greg Lenz's Twitter photos, then you'd figure it out. But
okay. Yeah, because I sent it out to some friends.
He tweeted that out.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? He tweeted it
it's
out.
It's hysterical.
It
you,
is hysterical.
That, hey, you know what? If that offends you, don't listen.
Yeah.
Don't follow me. You know? I won't force you to follow me.
Oh, did you? This is completely unrelated to anything. But
that's
did
what
you hear,
we're here for.
Did you hear that the internet has officially changed English grammar?
Really?
The concept, the linguists are starting to say that there is a new grammatical function for the term because, and it is, I don't remember exactly what they're calling. They actually have like a grammatical term for it now. But it's basically like whenever you say, you know, the stars are awesome because science. That use of the word because, as in that sense, is now actually grammatically correct.
And they say it is because it is so used by and large by the internet that it just, it's an organic function of the language, and it is now grammatically correct.
Because the internet.
Remember when words mean things and we had that conversation on that? And now, now that because has meaning again.
It's well, like Thomas see, Thomas but, Massey but, when he nah, when he did nah. the dog speak.
The doge speak, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't imagine how many of his constituents are like, my congressman is stroking out. Like
it's so cool, though.
No, it is.
What it's so cool.
If you well, explain
Such
what we're
cool,
talking
very
about.
Very wow.
Yeah. Look up, look up, go to Know Your Mem and look up D-O-G-E. It's basically dog.
I don't know where it came from, but it's a meme that I kind of like.
It's much impressive.
Oh, I love the Paul Krugman Doge meme. It is window broken. I'm not doing it justice, but look it up. It's hilarious.
Yeah. And so Congressman Thomas Massey said something.
About the budget deal.
What did he say?
He said something like,
much disappointment.
Much bipartisanship, very spending, wow.
Yeah. And I'm just sitting there like, did he have aphasia?
Well, it was a tweet, right?
It was a Facebook post
and a tweet. He did a Facebook post where he put that and then he put like the description, but the tweet, it actually is the Doge picture.
My initial thought, this before I heard about it, I was like, that is the worst haiku ever.
I just was sitting there like, is he okay? Yeah. Like, I knew what he was talking about, but I don't think
Kentucky.
Anybody over 30 does.
It's so, I've seen him speak a couple times. I've been out there, man. He is quickly becoming like one of my favorite. I mean, he's already one of my favorite, but like my favorite.
He looks a little nerdy.
He is a little nerdy, man, and he's so cool about it.
Not that I'm
like,
judging.
He was an engineer.
Listen, no judging.
He was he went to MIT and he before and
millionaire, self-made.
Yeah,
I take it back, Thomas Massey.
You're
not nerdy, especially if you donate at WeLibertarians.com.
I forget exactly what it was that he invented. He invented something and he had started a company to sell and all that stuff, and now I think he sold the company and he lives out in Kentucky, and he ran for a local office there and won and cleaned up the local office, and then before that term was up he ran for House and won, and
he rode the Tea Party Express.
He's really good though, man. I mean, you guys know all the stuff that he supports.
He's such a
nerd though, like a cool nerd. Like he'll talk your ear off about the Tesla car and all this kind of stuff. You know, before he'll talk about politics, of course. But like after the national convention, he was at a bar with us after the at the after party, and like, you know, the conversations he was having was all about like science and stuff with everybody. He wasn't really talking about politics, and I was just like, this guy is awesome.
You have tight pants on, so I hate to bring this up, but is he cooler than Rand Paul?
Yeah. Cooler, probably.
He's going to get a jealous phone call here in a minute from Rand.
Do you like Justin Amash and Thomas Massey better than Rand?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, I sense trouble in Rand Bonerland.
But can't I just like them all the same?
No, there will only be
equality.
One. You're a social...
Play some identity politics for Christ's sake.
You're a social conservative. There can only be one.
Old Teddy.
Right.
No.
And he's Hispanic. Plus for you.
I'm kind of a social conservative.
Well, not... I mean, you're a... You are a conservative in the sense that you are personally conservative, in the sense that you are...
I don't
do
drugs.
Right. You're not like you're not a social conservative in the sense of like a
Santorum.
Santorum. Right. You're not a government policy social conservative. And by the way, all right, this is what I want to end on, and I briefly touched on it earlier. Thomas Hagee, or John Hagee, the megachurch pastor out in Texas, you can see him on TBN and various other shill networks.
Is he the one with the like the hair?
Yeah, he's old timey looking, and he's a great fiery old Pentecostal preacher. He's probably he's probably 350 with the slick back white hair and the glasses, and he's like, "To change, if you feel the urge to merge, blah blah blah." You know,
in the first American revival, he probably would have been crowned king,
right?
Yeah.
So he's very entertaining to watch, but he went on a rant about how Christmas is being stolen. Excuse me. He went on a rant about how Christmas is being stolen and how happy holidays and blah, blah, blah. And I guess Obama didn't put Merry Christmas on the Christmas card. He said happy holidays. Christians, from one to another, give it up. Come on now. if Obama writes Merry Christmas, then he's segmenting it to our religion. If he writes Happy Holidays, he is the president of everyone. He's not the president of Christians like George Bush. He's the president of everyone. Happy Holidays covers everybody. It's the holidays. It's the holy days is where the term comes from. It's Thanksgiving, a secular holiday.
Is it even holidays this year?
It's Happy Holidays.
But it's not holidays this year.
It's
because Hanukkah was in
Yeah, but that's the point. Holidays encompasses Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, if that's your bag, Christmas,
Shinto,
New Year's Eve. Yeah, of course it's a religion. But
we'll have Gene explain it to you.
Yeah. And so the holidays encompass...
Wait, did you just say, of course that's a religion?
Of course.
Of course you should know that that's a religion. What are you, some backwoods redneck?
What are you, duck hunting?
Someone pour me a cup of hot chocolate.
But this is my point, okay? Give it up. The whole point of holidays is holy days is the root. It's not anti-religious to say that it's happy holidays. You're making us sound like pathetic fools.
But it
is
anti-atheist, so you're still playing identity politics.
Well, screw those guys.
Say happy cold season.
Right. Right. Merry Red
December.
Right. Merry December. No, I mean, but the holidays, too, are Thanksgiving, secular. New Year's Day, secular. Like, it's just so irritating. You know, and he's like, if you don't like Merry Christmas, then you can leave the country. It's like, John, baby, let's chat. You know, maybe you ought to go. I'm just saying. So, all right, well, Mittens is at the scratching post. I'm yawning, so it's time to say goodbye. I felt that this has been a good episode. I feel that it's been a solid 3.5 on a scale of 5.
Yeah.
For us,
that's overachieving.
That's overachieving. It's probably going to be our worst received episode, especially by basically anyone that's not white. Yeah. So,
there are three Indian, Native Americans, sorry, but I can say it because I'm one. So,
right,
sitting on, we're allowed to talk about it. That's our street cred, if you will.
All right, thank you for listening to We Are Libertarians. Please share, and we look forward to talking to you next week. And as always,
we promise to do better next time.
I almost forgot about that. Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.